हरिः ॐ सहना भवतु सहना भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्त वृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम हरे राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay, why mistaken? Okay, so here we have mantra 9. Because mantra 9 is comparing the different results of cultivating knowledge and indulging in ignorance. So showing these total. If you cultivate knowledge, what happens? If you cultivate ignorance, then what happens? Okay, misguided knowledge is more dangerous than nescience. In mantra 9, two types of materialists are described. The materially ignorant and the materially educated. Of the two, the second group is worse. Quote, this mantra offers a comparative study of vidya and avidya. Avidya, or ignorance, is undoubtedly dangerous, but vidya, or knowledge, is even more dangerous when mistaken or misguided. Shishupanishad Mantra 9, purport. Why mistaken knowledge is more harmful than ignorance? Quote, as far as vidya is concerned, the first mantra has explained very clearly that the Supreme Lord is the proprietor of everything, and that forgetfulness of this fact is ignorance. The more a man forgets this fact of life, the more he is in darkness. In view of this, a godless civilization directed towards the so-called advancement of education is more dangerous than a civilization in which the masses of people are less educated. Means educated here is in quotes, meaning that kind of education. So in other words, the point is people are doing activities and their ignorance is that they've forgotten God. Right? So that's bad. But then when you compound that with the actual education is atheistic, so it's not even geared to making you remember God, but even taking you farther away, then that's more dangerous. Right? Because they're saying that, you know, it's not God, there's science, there's so many other things that are making everything work. So that's more dangerous. Right? Here it is. Then, the so-called intellectuals and scholars who support and facilitate sense gratification are doing more harm than the laymen engaged in it. Right? This is according to... Here it is in the footnote. According to Dharma Shastra, if one follows a false philosophy, he will receive the reaction for it. However, if one manufactures his own philosophy and speaks it, thus misleading others, he receives 100 times the reaction for it. On the other hand, if someone knows the truth but does not present it for the benefit of all, he is also considered sinful. Quote, those who worship with false knowledge fall into blinding darkness. And those who worship with true knowledge alone, without correcting the false knowledge, fall into even greater darkness. So in other words, someone out of ignorance, you have a muda, right? And he is just doing nonsense. It happens, right? And he'll get the reaction for it, right? According to karma, whatever it is. But if now someone manufactures the philosophy about that bogus activity, and then propounds it, he will get 100 times the reaction. Does this make sense? So it's very dangerous, then, we can see, for anyone who opposes the scripture, opposes the Vedic principles, out of their philosophy. If out of ignorance they don't understand, that's one thing. That people don't understand, you explain it to them, it works nicely. But if they think that they're very correct in their opposition of this, very intelligent, then they get 100 types of reaction. Like that. So it's much greater. So that's the one thing. Then it's mentioning here, on the other hand, is if they themselves know, but there's a situation in which they could give some direction to help, but they don't, then that's also considered bad, or even worse. I mean, let me say, worse in the way of someone who is, how you say? In ignorance. In other words, someone's in ignorance, they don't know. They're doing something, they're going to get the reaction. So worse than this, then, is someone who could correct it, but doesn't. But we see from this, the most worse is someone who then speaks in a way to encourage that ignorance. Okay? So then we have these two levels. So the best thing is be in knowledge, practice it, and that when the opportunity is there, give it to others. Right? So that's considered the proper platform. These misguided educators are described in Bhagavad Gita 2.42 and 7.15 as Mayaya Apritigyana, Asura Bhavam Ashrita, and Vedavara Rata. The, quote, the Mayaya Pratigyana class of men are self-made gods. Such men think that they themselves are gods and that there is no need of worshipping any other god. They will agree to worship an ordinary man if he happens to be rich, but they will never worship the personality of Godhead. The Mayaya Pratigyana category, therefore, includes the Mayavadis and the atheistic scholars. Okay, so it's that they, means their knowledge is stolen by illusion, doesn't mean that they're not intelligent, right? This idea, this kind of melodramatic idea is that they're going to be really stupid. No, they're very, very clever, very intelligent. We can say something from the philosophy, and they already analyze it and come up with their material concept. They're very smart, very qualified. But, unfortunately, they are never able to use that intelligence in connection with God consciousness. That's the problem. If you have an intellectual or an educator who they also are just a more educated muda, that they're in their ignorance of going on, they come in contact with Krishna consciousness and they utilize that intelligence to bring themselves to that theistic platform, then that's good. Yeah. Does that make sense? It's only when, having heard this philosophy, then they, use still against that, then that becomes bad. But if they're misguiding people, of course, that's already bad. But we're just talking about they themselves personally taking up Krishna consciousness. So it's not that these persons aren't intelligent enough to see the validity of Krishna consciousness. As many times we'd see when you preach, many of these academics, you know, are smart enough to understand that something is there. Otherwise, how is it that someone who's not very academic or very intellectual could understand it? Why couldn't someone who is academic or intellectual, right? And they can also. Like that. And the tendency, though, is they already think themselves very special. That's the weakness is there. Like that. Okay. Yes?
It said that whatever a person has is through Krishna's grace. So how is it that a person can become very intelligent when he's using his intelligence against Krishna?
Because he wants to. So is that a problem? Someone's, why is every living entity in the material world? Because it's something great that they're doing something special for Krishna? No, they all are forgetting Krishna. So it's just a matter of how they forget Krishna. Right? they're distracted more by the senses, more by economics and justice and, you know, ethics, or more by religion, or more by, liberation. You know what I'm saying? So all these are the different forms of forgetfulness. Dharma, Artha, Kama, Moksha, being used for oneself, that's what goes on here. You know what I'm saying? So, therefore, it's just a matter of how the living entity wants to forget Krishna. So that's available. But at the same time, because the material world is designed so that one goes back to Godhead, therefore there's something also on all those platforms of Dharma, Artha, Kama, and Moksha that one can take up Krishna consciousness. Right? In other words, it's designed for that, but it's written in such a way that if that's not what you want, you can still miss it. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? It's in other words, why would you want somebody doing something for you? Because they spontaneously like to do it, or because they have to do it? Means they wouldn't really want to do it, but they're doing it because they're supposed to be doing it. Or because they like to do it. Which of the two?
They like to do it, it would be better.
If they like to do it, it would be better. Okay, so now for Krishna, then the whole point is that you're doing it because you like to do it. That's always going to be a better interaction than you're doing it simply because you have to do it, but you'd rather not. You know what I'm saying? That. So that's the whole idea, is that, you know, since we're working on the eternal platform, then there's time. You know what I'm saying? Here we look at no time, but the point is there's plenty of time for Krishna to wait for us to get it together, you know, and decide to, you know, behave in the proper way. Right? There's not a time limit, or there's not a use before a certain date, you know. Used before the 57th, you know, lifetime of Brahma, or the soul, you know, goes bad or something. You know what I'm saying? It's just always there. You don't have to worry about that. You know? So, the idea is that the living entity wants this, but it should be that he's gone through all this, and therefore he has learned in this way. Right? Now, what is this method of learning? Yes, third class intelligence means that by experiencing it, you understand. Okay? So now, this kind of platform is specific to what nature? No, in comparing here means Krishna and his energy. Right? Krishna is all-knowing, so therefore, you know, not only is it he understands before hearing about it, he is the one that makes what you hear about, right? So that's his intelligence. His intelligence is even before hearing, you know, which is considered first class, right? But the energy, the tendency is because the energy is itself basically experience. You know what I'm saying? Energy. The feminine nature is basically experience. So, therefore, its primary way of gaining things is through experience. Does that make sense? So, the jiva being energy, the tendency is they will learn through experience. So, having been in the material world for a long time, trying everything there is to try, and then it not working, then you start to decide that there's something wrong here, right? Because inherently you want to be happy, right? You want everything to last forever, but things don't. So then they start to turn to other ideas than their, you know, pure natural materialism. You know what I'm saying? So then they come up with all these, you know, impersonalism or Buddhism or, you know, some other kind of things, you know, that they come up with to try to explain things or like that. But it doesn't explain it. So then they get tired of that. So at some point, then the soul is ready for the real philosophy. Right? And at that time, then in coming in contact with the bona fide spiritual master, then they hear the real philosophy. Then they are able to actually take up Krishna consciousness. Does that make sense? Because otherwise, you hear Krishna consciousness, but there's a doubt that, well, there's something in the material engagement or material knowledge that is still useful for me. So you get distracted by that. So what does that mean? It technically means third-class intelligence. Right? So that's kind of the nature of what you're dealing with. But what's being encouraged is, because the living entity claims to be the Purusha, or the enjoyer, which puts them in the masculine position, then why not use masculine intelligence means learn by hearing? You know what I'm saying? So that process of learning by hearing, and that, then that cuts the material energy. Right? But if not, it's so perfect a system that you can learn by seeing second class or learn by experiencing third class. In any case, as long as you learn, that's the main point. It's just by hearing is more efficient, it's quicker. Right? Like that. By seeing, you have to be in environments where you can observe. And by experiencing, you have to be actually engaged in the activity itself. So you have to be able to generate the facility to do that. So much more work, much more time spent. But in any case, as long as the result is you understand, then it's good. You know what I'm saying? So the idea is, as much as possible, learn by hearing, and then apply that into whatever experiences you're in anyway, because you're always in an experience. Right? So apply that intelligence to that what you've heard to what you're actually engaged in. So that way then the shabda is then seen as pratyaksha. That gives you the best, that gives you realization. Does that make sense? When you can see the philosophy in your life right in front of you, your daily life, that means you understand the philosophy. Right? Does that make sense? So that's what you're trying to do. Is that okay? You had something?
Yes, Raj. I was wondering, what makes Narayama worse than Maya Pratigyana?
What makes a Narayama worse than a Maya Pratigyana? Basically because the Maya Pratigyana hasn't really come in contact with Krishna consciousness. They just function on their own, they have their own philosophy in that, and if they happen to come across it, they don't really consider it. They're too proud, so they just reject it. But it's not exactly, it's not an item to even accept. You know, it's like putting an apple in front of a dog. You know, it's not even something to even consider. You know what I'm saying? It doesn't fit within the realm of even categories of contemplation. So therefore the Krishna consciousness in their mind doesn't there. So that will keep them in that position. Naradhamma basically would mean is that they actually have come in contact with Krishna consciousness, have the opportunity to practice it, and could see the value of it, but reject it. You know, in other words, they can see the value. So technically, if you really want to get more technical, a Naradhamma is someone who has practiced Krishna consciousness and rejects it. But we don't generally talk on that line too much. Does that make sense? Yeah.
Isn't that all of us then?
All of us? No, because you're still practicing. You know what I'm saying? But if you give up the practice, move outside of the sphere of the devotees, and then talk about, one of the persons he learned from, and this and that, and all this and that, and you write all these nice things on your nice, very broad-ranged conferences, then that's a Naradhamma. You know what I'm saying? Something like that. It's not a matter of essentially, I mean, you have problem following Krishna consciousness, so essentially you get distracted. You know what I'm saying? That's not a Naradhamma. Naradhamma is philosophically you reject Krishna consciousness. Yes. That doesn't mean you can't practice it due to weakness of heart or due to, just being overwhelmed with material desire. This means that philosophically you actually consider that the Krishna consciousness is not a superior philosophy. It's not important. You don't need it. You know. Yes.
Well, in that case, one of the person simply been misinformed, because after you hear about the philosophy, it fits basically everything. So they just have to be stubborn to not accept it.
They have to be stubborn, but the problem is the position they put themselves into is that of the lowest of mankind, because they've come across the real thing and they won't take it. Does that make sense? So that's the principle. So it's a very delicate thing, this point. You know? So in other words, you want to try, means, does that make some sense? What is there? So then you'll get, because, yeah. Because the influence of the Vedic culture is much greater than most people give it credit for. You know? Means you're chanting Hare Krishna, you're chanting out loud. How many unlimited limiting entities are there in the form of just germs in the air that are being put in contact with the holy name? You know what I'm saying? The trees and the bugs and everything else. I mean, how many living entities? Does that make sense? So from that, they're purified, they're elevated. Does that make sense? So, but a lot of times we think it's just these few people that we know and that's it. You know, there's, you know, so many, you know, tens of thousands of people engaged in Krishna consciousness they know of, and that's all the influence we have, and we're a bunch of, you know, small, out-of-the-way little weirdos. We kind of forget that there are 14 planetary systems, then all 13 of them, all they do is follow Vedic culture. And on this planetary system, you know, of the 14th, there are, what is it, 9 islands. So 8 of them are following Vedic culture. So all it leaves is this part of one of the islands where people are given the opportunity that if they don't want to follow it, that's their option. But the whole rest of the universe, all the other universes, the whole cosmic creation is following Vedic culture. So then you have a few of these Maya Pratigyanas and other things that are so proud to think that whatever little headspace that they're able to accommodate and think about actually has some value outside of Krishna consciousness. So therefore they can have the audacity to try to speak against or break down the Vedic concept. Yes?
I don't quite understand the difference between the Maya Pratigyanas coming in contact with the spiritual.
Because they don't acknowledge it as something of even consideration. You know what I'm saying? It's just like, let's say, you have a dog, or we were saying, like that, and you give him an apple. He rejecting that, it's not that he rejected it, because you, means rejection means something you could accept, you reject. But dogs don't eat fruit. You know, they don't eat apples. So therefore, to reject it, it's like, it's not a rejection. Because they don't deal with anything out of their, all they see is what they see is all there is. So their intelligence has been taken by Maya to the point where they cannot actually appreciate that Krishna conscious philosophy has any substance. It's just another viewpoint that doesn't fit into theirs, so they're not even going to consider it. You understand? While the Naradhamma is someone who can consider it, can appreciate its value, but doesn't take it. Does that make sense? You have a devotee and then he gets distracted by bad habits and goes outside the temple and does all this nonsense. That happens. Right? But if he decides that Srila Prabhupada actually isn't giving the highest philosophy, but this other guru somewhere else, you know, like that, that has nothing to do really with our line, he has more to say that becomes a Naradhamma. Does that make sense? Like that. Or you have, you know, how you say, it means your sixth canto then describes that anybody who is in any kind of aristocratic, noble, or, you know, somehow or another respected for their in social position, you know, in your academic or, you know, religious way, all of them are in that position because of having done some devotional service. Right? So this is, it's in the sixth canto. It's mentioned one time, but it's something that most devotees don't somehow or another appreciate or know about. You know, so they're talking about all these other people out there. See these successful people, we want to be like them, so therefore we'll read their self-help books. Right? But the point is the self-help book is for the guy that's not there. And the self-help book is studying those people who are there. So how did they get there? Not by having this knowledge, but by devotional service. That's what's absolutely and totally missed. But that's the fact. No one is in any good position unless they've actually done devotional service. Right? So now, in this case, because they're not in contact, generally this means it will be agyata sukriti. Right? In other words, you've done pious activity, that means it's not in, it's Vedic means, in other words, the Vedic principle is coming down from Krishna. Krishna's given the Vedic injunction, right? It's coming directly from him. You follow that because it's a Vedic injunction, that's called pious. Okay? You're following that Vedic injunction, yeah, because it means it's pious, you don't know it's connected to Krishna, you just know it's an injunction, you follow it, right? That's pious. You don't know that it's connected to Krishna, and you're following it, but that arrangement for you to follow it has been arranged by a devotee, but you still don't know it's devotional service, that's agyata sukriti. Right? And the thing has been arranged by devotees, you follow it and you know what it is, that's called devotional service. Right? The same activity. Does that make sense? You know, like you have a Rath Yatra, it's arranged by devotees. The karmis see the festival or take part or take some prasad or see the deity. They don't know what's going on. That's agyata sukriti. Right? But the devotees know what it is, that's devotional service. Okay? Does that make sense? Okay. So this agyata sukriti is what puts them in the position they're in. Okay? Now, if that pious, you know, intelligent, well-situated person comes in contact with Krishna consciousness, it will be done with an eye that maybe there's something of value here. Right? Because they have a tendency towards it because of agyata sukriti. Right? Does that make sense? Okay? Now, if they on their own volition reject it, or because of the particular behavior in that of the devotees they reject it, then they become a Naradhamma. Does that make sense? It's a different position. So that's why you have to be very, very careful when you're preaching in that kind of category of people. Right? Because it's not that you know, you spoke something or dealt in a way that wasn't actually appreciated by them, you know, for good reason. You know, if you're doing everything very nicely and they still reject it, that's their own fault. What can you do? But if by your behavior and presentation, because they expect very good behavior or very proper presentation, and you deal in an uncultured way just because you think, I'm a devotee, I can do whatever I like, then when they give up, when they reject Krishna consciousness, then you can't say they're insincere. You'll get a very bad reaction for that, because you've just turned someone into a Naradhamma. Does that make sense? So that's why you have to give them Krishna consciousness in a way they can understand, but you have to give them straight Krishna consciousness, because they deal in the material world, they know what it is. They don't need to hear your politically correct, you know, trying to, you know, tiptoe around everything stuff. They don't need that. They live in that world. Right? They want to hear something real. You know what I'm saying? So therefore, you have to be very, very careful when you're dealing with that. Does that make sense? So generally, this Naradama comes in the form of their professionals and this kind of thing. That's generally the class where you'll find them. Your intellectuals, like here, Mayavadis, atheistic scholars, they'll generally your Mayaya Pratijnanas, you know, administrators and that who deal with the big kind of management, and are there generally the asuras. You know, anyone who, like, you know, managing and organizing is the main thing. They're asuras. All right, and the common labor, he, you know, in his ignorance, he's the muda. That's general category. Of course, it doesn't have, that's just generally how it would fall. But it's not that it wouldn't be exactly like that. You know what I'm saying? You can find cases that'll be mixes of these or, you know, otherwise placed. You know, I say, you know, you have your New York taxi driver who's technically a mudha, but they're great big philosophers, you know. So, like, you know, so like that. You know, so you have all these mixes. Is that okay? Does that make some difference? Yes.
Well, as you mentioned, that the way feminine nature learns is through experience.
Yes.
Why is that?
Why is that? You're dealing with the principles sambandhavide and prayojana, right? So the element of sankarshan, that's your intellectual aspect in which you're deciding what's what. You know, what is religion, what's not religion, and all these different things. So that's basically purely intellectual. It's just, here's the rule, this is the way it is. Okay? In the performance of that, you don't find that there's any specific, there's no emotional content. Right? So that's definitely not feminine. You understand? Feminine means, if it doesn't have emotional content, it doesn't have any value. Does that make sense? So, the feminine, though, the content is there, so there's that element of that rasa. And because the point is when there is interaction, there's experience. Okay? So that experience, that is what your masculine and feminine parties are looking for. So the feminine, I say, problem is this is it's a very big topic, so how to. The feminine nature then is dependent upon the masculine nature for that steadiness and that field of activity in which you can have experience. Does that make sense? Doesn't make sense. Why doesn't it make sense?
I didn't follow what you were saying exactly.
Yeah, it'll be a problem. We said that you're establishing the kshetra, the field of activities, on what's right and wrong. Right? That's the masculine principle. The feminine principle, by connecting to that, then can generate higher grade experience. Does that make sense? Feminine always connects themselves to what is the best they can find, you know, that can generate the proper field of activities. You know what I'm saying? They're not going to go for something less. So with the best, they, in their own sphere, they'll consider, okay? So then, connecting there, then that means is their connection to knowledge is still through experience. Because your prayojan is connected to sambandha still through abhideya. And abhideya is what generates the experience. Does that make sense? Well, the sambandha is knowledge, but the knowledge is dry unless it's connected to the prayojana. Then it has life, it has meaning. Does that make sense? So the masculine is turning to the feminine for that life, right? And the feminine is turning to the masculine for that stableness of a field that can generate, you know, express that life. Does that make sense? So the one can intellectualize and without dealing with it, come to a conclusion and then act. But the other one, it's only through action that something is appreciated. Does that make sense? Okay. So that's the principle. So when we're talking here, third class intelligence, this does not mean that the intellectual capacity is less. It just means the nature of understanding is an inferior. It means, in other words, if you could hear "don't do that" and not do it, it saves you time and energy. Well, if you have to do it, then you spend more time and energy. But now to be able to do it requires a lot of intelligence, to be able to arrange the facility, to be able to be engaged in the activity, and then to actually have compared the knowledge to the experience, and then seeing that the knowledge is the better position. The experience wasn't so good. You know what I'm saying? So that takes a lot of brains. But still, even though that's very sophisticated and developed brains, it's still less, considered less than the brains of you heard it, you understood it, and you practice, and then you don't have to, you only practice what you should do rather than. Does that make sense? So in other words, it's the quality of the intellectual that we're dealing with. But in either case, both are very intelligent. You know what I'm saying? So it's just like in the Vedic cultures that will say the Shudra is the, you know, the lower of the four varnas. But in the Vedic concept of what is a human being is well above anything that goes on anywhere on this planet. You know what I'm saying? So a Shudra, by modern definition, basically is like a saint. You know what I'm saying? Then that's your common person. Then Vaishyas, Kshatriyas, and Brahmins have even more desirable qualities than that. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like, let's say you went to a top school, you know, the best school, and your grades weren't so good, right? And so others in the school think you're not such a good student, right? But what are your grades compared to the national platform, right? Good was the 4-point average. You were not so good, so you were at 3.9. Right, so therefore you didn't get into the medical school, right? But your grades are still, you know, in the A's, well above your common student from any other school. Does that make sense? But in your field, that's considered less. Does that make sense? So in the same way, as Shudras are said to be less than the others, because you're talking about, you know, excellent, more excellent, most excellent, right? So in the same way, it's also meaning the same principle is applied that the women are less intelligent than men simply because of this point. But we're talking about very intelligent. You know what I'm saying? Because the feminine nature, to be able to perform all those duties, you have to be very intelligent. But it would be more intelligent if just by hearing you could do it rather than having to go through it. Does that make sense? That's the point. So it's not on the modern thing that we say Shudra is in a less position or women are less intelligent. This is on the Vedic standard. So the problem is that people will take what's the Vedic standard, not understanding it, and then try to apply those principles, logic, to their modern position. and then they'll get upset with the Vedic. But it's actually because they don't know what they're talking about. You know, they're actually acting many times on this platform, the Mayaya Pratigyana, or the Naradama. You know what I'm saying? Because to say the Vedic isn't politically correct means they don't even know what politics is in the first place. They don't even know what is real political. They don't know what is real ethics. They don't know what's real dharma. So they're in no position to even speak. But because of their pride, they do. What to do? But they have no standing, absolutely no standing. Because they're trying to compare one thing to another. You know, it's like they're trying to compare the colors to, let's say, some taste or something like that. And they're not even very expert at that. And then they say it doesn't make sense. You know, my tongue is not able to tell, you know, understand, appreciate the colors, you know, of the rainbow. So therefore, you know, this rainbow is absolutely useless, has nothing to do with now. That's about the level of intelligence they're working at. Though they're very clever. That's why I said Mayaya Pratigyana means very intelligent, but very misdirected. You know what I'm saying? So the point is we say these things very pleasantly. Says the Mayaya, you know, atheistic scholars. So if you're against the Vedic principle, that's atheism. Right? And we always have to remember devotional service until it comes to the platform of purity is always mixed. You know what I'm saying? So it's not that because you're a devotee, you can't be an atheistic scholar. You understand? The point is it's a generic category that's put there that's what we're not interested in. Like that. But the point is if the shoe fits. Right? So anyone who opposes the Shastra and the Vedic version is atheistic in that area. Other areas they may be not atheistic. But they're atheistic. You know, just like you could say, well, how can that be? Take a modern religionist, right? You know, or let's say not a modern, let's take a world religionist, okay? Is they believe in God. They say he's a person. So describe him. He has no form. He has no qualities. So they claim to be monotheistic, that they worship God as a person, but ultimately they say he doesn't have a form. So technically, their theism is actually not theistic. Right? Because they don't actually accept God for who he is. But the sentiment is good because that part that's theistic, that you take and do something with. The part where it's not theistic, that you leave. So as long as they have some humility, then you can deal with the one and ignore the other. But if they're proud, they demand that the other is always dealt with because that's their claim to fame. That's what makes them special. Right? You know, saying all the devotees are talking about, you know, the Vedic culture and the Shastra, but I'm different. You know, I have my own philosophy. And therefore that makes me, sets me apart. And I actually see with the real vision. And these others out of sentiment are just doing this. Or out of lack of intelligence. But because I'm so intelligent, I see things differently. But they forget that there's someone more intelligent than them called Maya, who tricks them. Does that make sense? So that's the whole point. So that's why we're very, very careful with these areas. Prabhupada says, you want to catch the fish, you do it by not getting wet. Right? So they're claiming that they're catching the fish, but they're up to the neck in water. And we still don't see any fish. You know what I'm saying? So, therefore, according to Shastra, we have absolutely nothing good to say about that position. Right? The individual may have something to work with, may have that, you know, that devotional element or service that they've done that you can work with, But the position they're taking, we have absolutely no regard for. Zero. They're smart, their intelligence is respected. But how they're applying their intelligence, we have no regard. It's just another dime a dozen. They think they're special, but there's millions of people like that. It's just another face in the crowd. It just happens to be the intellectual crowd rather than just the on the street crowd, that's all. It's just another face in the crowd. Does that make sense? So they're claiming to try to do something special, but they've gotten so wet that their actual, what they had to say, has become useless. In fact, it's become non-devotional. Does that make sense? So it's a very, very careful thing that one has to deal with these. That's why we don't get too much into the details of them. Because otherwise a neophyte devotee then will start pointing fingers and feel that they're better than the other because they can find a fault in the other one. That's, you know, there's some support on how they can find a fault. So that's why these things are dealt with very, very, there's points made strong but kept very, very generic. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Yeah. So these are things that one has to be very careful about. Otherwise, it means the Spanish Inquisition was not a pleasant time for anybody like that. No one benefited on any side. But that's a perfect example of the neophyte taking the philosophy of religion and using it against others for their own purposes. You know what I'm saying? So that's why one is very, very careful about that kind of thing. So the point is the philosophy is spoken, the individual should take it, analyze themselves, what applies to them, use it. What doesn't apply to them, then they don't have to worry about. You know? And that works nicely as long as that's the field that you're dealing with. But if people take their philosophy and don't want to be wrong, and therefore make it into a philosophy, and then to be even more right, preach it, then at some point, then the things have to be said straight. But you try to keep it as soft as possible. That makes sense. So that's how it works. But otherwise, that can't be done, and that can't go on, and it won't be allowed. Does that make sense? Yeah. Anything else on that? No. Okay. Oh, time's up anyway.
Om Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki Jai Samavita Bhaktivrinda ki
Jai
Jai Nita Gaura Premanandi because it's also colder, so they don't seem to get old.